Mount Mazama left a lasting mark on our region. The volcano blew its top more than 7,000 years ago, scattering ash around the region and making the hole that we know today as Crater Lake. Let's talk about the ash. It lay very deep in western Oregon, so it took a while, more than 7,000 years, for researchers to dig through the ash to find evidence of people who lived close to Mazama before it blew. Our first guest today has been leading efforts to dig through the ash to find where and how people lived in western Oregon so long ago. Brian O'Neill is an archaeologist attached to the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. He'll be presenting a program called Beneath the Ash, Archaeology of the Upper Umpqua River at the Eugene Library tomorrow at 3. He's our guest here now. Brian O'Neill, welcome.
Good morning, Jeff.
This is a real chance to bring archaeology and geology together. Talk about the pathway that led you here.
Excuse me?
I said this is a real chance to bring archaeology and geology together. Talk about the pathway you took to get to where you've been researching.
Well, one of the things that we've been doing over the years is we've been working with federal agencies and state agencies to investigate sites that are going to be in the way of construction disturbance. That's really much of the way in which we have discovered these archaeological sites. The science behind it, the geology behind it, has been that we have made sure that the ash that we are investigating, or the ash below which the remains are found, is Mazama ash. As you certainly are aware, and your listeners are aware, there's lots of ash out there. And so what we wanted to make sure of was that we were digging beneath Mazama ash. And this has been done through geochemical analysis of the tephra immediately above the buried soil.
Does each volcano have its own fingerprint in a sense? I mean, can you tell where the ash came from?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Not only does the ash have a fingerprint, but also the obsidian that is extruded from flows, that also has its own fingerprint from different flows.
All right, so I mean, I guess I was a little surprised, when, you know, after living here for 30 years, to look at a map of the ash fall from Mazama. It was very widely distributed across the western part of the continent.
It was, and what is a little remarkable is that we haven't found many sites, say, in the Rogue drainage, but we have found them in the Umpqua drainage, the upper Umpqua drainage. The ash cloud went generally to the north and east rather than to the west, blanketing the landscape. And so it's a great stratigraphic marker for archaeologists doing work in that area. To the west of the Cascades, we don't find much of that ash as a marker. So we're pretty lucky to have that where we are looking right now.
So, Brian, are you saying that there was some sort of project, maybe a highway project or something going on that led to the excavation in the first place?
The first site that was discovered beneath volcanic ash was one that was being investigated by Oregon State University for the Forest Service up around Medicine Creek in the upper North Umpqua River drainage. This was looked at by Sandy Snyder, an archaeologist, and they excavated through the ash into the buried soil. And they found this remarkable amount of cultural material in the buried soil. It wasn't for another 10 years, 15 years, that we had an opportunity to take a look at other sites. And this was, we had an opportunity to take a look at a site along the highway that was part of an ODOT project. They were going to be replacing a bridge at Dry Creek, near the Dry Creek store. And we had an opportunity to take a look at those at that site, and we found that there was archaeological material not only in the ash. People have been occupying this bench above the river since the eruption of Mount Mazama, but then before the eruption of Mount Mazama, we had a great deal of material beneath the ash, and we also had what appeared to have been an area where people had cleared off the rock and had probably set up a wiki up of some kind, and there were a couple of hearths and so on.
Brian O'Neill's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, archaeologist at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. We're talking about digging beneath the ash fall left by Mount Mazama's eruption 7,600 years ago in the North Umpqua country and finding evidence of human habitation that predates the eruption of Mazama. Join the discussion on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You've used the terms remains and cultural materials. There are no actual human remains.
No, that's right. I just mean cultural deposits. That's right.
So when we say cultural materials, what kinds of things are we talking about?
Well, generally what we find are lots and lots of waste flakes, flaking debris from the manufacture of stone tools. Then we also find a lot of formed artifacts, knives, scrapers, drills, a lot of projectile points that were used to tip atlatl darts. Grinding stones, hammer stones. I mean, there's such a wide variety of materials that are found here. Also, the materials that we are finding, the formed tools, the projectile points, indicate that people from a large area were having an influence on folk in that area. For example, we were finding projectile points that are similar to those found in Northern California. Projectile points that are found, or similar to those that are found, say around Newberry Crater and farther to the east on the Columbia Plateau. So it's an area where a lot of people are intermingling.
So culturally, technologically, are you finding major differences between what you're finding below the ash and the people who lived in the land after the ash fall was a long history?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The materials beneath the ash are very different from those found above the ash. What we are also finding are tools that drilled stone, and actually I'm not entirely certain what they are. They're these sort of flat stones that have holes drilled through them. We don't find those things in the later deposits. There are in the pre-Mazama deposits. We also find basalt bifaces that we don't find in the later deposits. Rather enigmatic, I suppose.
And the bifaces, as we learned recently, are sort of pre-tools. They're what they're going to be turning into other tools down the road.
No, these were tools. Bifaces are basically just tools that have been flaked on both mm-hmm. faces, both sides. For example, a knife, a chipstone knife, is a biface. So it's a generic term, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, give us a sense of how long above and below the ash. I mean, how long was the landscape vacant? Would it appear after the Mazama eruption and the burying in ash? How thick was the ash, for that matter? And then how long before people began to move back into the area?
Well, the ash varies in thickness from east to west. Where we have very thick deposits, we're lucky enough to have road cuts that we're able to get an exposure. Get underneath the ash. To the west, the ash is relatively less thick, perhaps only a couple of meters thick. What was your question again?
The question was how long it appears that the land might have lain vacant with the ash all over before people came back and took up residence again.
Yeah, it's difficult to say. We have a site at Glide or near Glide on the North Umpqua at the Narrows that we have a radiocarbon date there of about 6,000 years ago. I don't know of many sites that are older than that is to say between 6 and 7,600 years ago. So it may have lain vacant for a considerable amount of time. However, we just haven't we just don't have that information. Very few sites really have been excavated. We've just been focusing our efforts on those that are covered with ash, and we've been very very successful. I guess one of the things too to consider in all of this is that the recent work by one of my colleagues, Dennis Jenkins, has discovered that the area has been occupied, or at least this area has been occupied since about 14,300 years ago. So the time period between the eruption of Mount Mazama and Dennis's discovery at Paisley Caves is about 7,000 years. So we've got 7,000 years of prehistory that's lain beneath the ash, and it's pretty exciting that what we have is that as soon as we get beneath the ash, we're starting at 7,600 years ago. In many places, you don't have that nice stratigraphic marker, and you have to rely on other kinds of information to provide you with a starting point or with the dating of your deposits, radiocarbon dating, for example. Mm-hmm. But with working at these kinds of sites that are buried beneath the ash, you know where you're starting from, and you're working backward from there.
Brian O'Neill again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, archaeologist at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. He'll be delivering a presentation called Beneath the Ash, Archaeology of the Upper Umpqua River, the ash coming from the eruption of Mount Mazama 7,600 years ago. The presentation tomorrow at 3 at the Eugene Library downtown. You can join us now on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the exchange.
Thank you. I appreciated your mention of Dennis Jenkins. I've been fortunate enough to hear him lecture. 1970, I started visiting the Dog Creek Indian Caves, which is above the area that you've been working on there at Dry Creek. And I was wondering how much you know of that area. And I'll take my answer on the radio.
All right. Thanks, Ann.
Well, Dog Creek Cave is a rock shelter along the North Umpqua River up Dog Creek, and I'm a little familiar with it, but I don't think that it is one of those sites that contains ash. At least I've never heard that it does. I visited that site, and actually it was one that was looted over a period of years, and you know, which is unfortunate, but that's one of the challenges that Forest Service has to protect its cultural resources.
What do we know, just in general, about in terms of thinking of pre-Mazama and post-Mazama eruption societies? How devastating the eruption itself might have been to the people who inhabited the area at the time? Is it even possible to know what kind of casualty reports there might have been?
There's been some attempt to address that. The catastrophic eruption would have certainly moved people along. There is no record of people who were caught up in the conflagration. There was a set of human remains that was discovered a number of years ago in the 1930s along the Crater Lake Highway or up in the Upper Rogue River drainage that Luther Cressman, the first archaeologist here in Oregon, thought that perhaps had been a victim of the eruption, but we haven't found. But that is really in question. We don't have any firm evidence of people being caught up in the ash flows or dying because of the eruption.
Is it that I read something somewhere in the work about this that the soil is acidic enough that any human remains would have been lost long ago?
That's possible. That's mm-hmm. possible. But there, I'm not entirely certain that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The process apparently is I noticed you wrote a couple of years ago, but this could be fairly tedious work. Are there any real woohoo finds? Are there moments when you stop and go, "Wow, got something big here"?
Well, getting beneath the ash is always interesting. I mean, it is labor intensive, and one of the challenges, of course, is that you need to have a large enough exposure as you go down, and then when you get to the buried soil, you have a large enough exposure to really see what the spatial relationship is of artifacts to one another, and perhaps these features, these possible living floors and so on. Yes. Sometimes the moments that stop you are in the field. Some of the time the excitement is in the lab. One of the things that we discovered at the site that we excavated as part of a pit project, a passport in time project, was a piece of human hair that was excavated from the buried soil. We had with us a fellow who had been with Dennis Jenkins in some of the cave projects, who was sensitive to these kinds of items. And anyway, he found this in the screen, and this hair was embedded in a piece of soil. I sent it off to Ashland to have it identified, and it turned out to be a piece of human hair.
So, wow, was it fossilized or something?
No. Not fossilized. It was just no, it wasn't fossilized.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Brian, how much assistance or interaction with area tribes in these digs?
We often have tribal monitors, particularly from the Cow Creek, but the Grand Ronde are also interested. And in 2009, when we were excavating at Williams Creek, we had a tribal monitor with us for the 3 weeks that we were there.
It seems like this is the kind of process you could do over and over and over again for years. I mean, has the digging come to a conclusion, or is there more left to do?
There's much more to do. There's much more to do. My problem right now is that I have enough on my plate, that is in terms of analysis, that I really don't feel right going back out and digging more. I'll leave that to someone else to do. I have my own analysis to do, and when I get that done, then perhaps I'll return to the field and look at more of these sites.
Okay, the work happening generally in the North Umpqua country. Brian O'Neill is an archaeologist at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. His presentation, Beneath the Ash, Archaeology of the Upper Umpqua River, will be held tomorrow at 3 at the library in downtown Eugene. Brian, thanks for giving us a preview here today on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.